Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with Health Dimensions Group CEO Aaron Shvetsov-Hennessy. The Minneapolis-based senior living company operates 50 communities in 9 states. In 2025, Health Dimensions Group has reached the milestone of 50 communities, and the company is now looking internally to integrate these new properties into its senior living portfolio. Crucial to these transitions are 3 distinct operations teams tasked with onboarding new properties.
We just saw a big push towards senior living for a variety of reasons: lifestyle factors, consumers, different acuity levels across the continuum, economic factors.
Before we get to today's episode, we want to let you know that if you've subscribed to the podcast directly through SoundCloud, a change that we've recently made in our infrastructure could affect your subscription. We apologize for the inconvenience and encourage you to subscribe through a podcast player such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Now, here's my interview with Health Dimensions Group CEO, Aaron Shvetsov-Hennessy. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us here on Transform.
Thank you for having me.
And I think the best place to start for us today is for you to help us familiarize our listeners who might not be as familiar with Health Dimensions Group. Can you give us just a rundown of what the portfolio looks like? And if you can just, in general, fill folks in about HDG. And congratulations on the 50th year anniversary, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, we're super excited. Health Dimensions Group, we're based in Minneapolis. So our portfolio is senior living communities, really heavily around that upper Midwest area. We have 50 communities across the country in 9 states, but I would say over 75% of them are in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois. We also have a presence in Texas and Colorado and Arkansas and Nevada and Pennsylvania, but really a high percentage of them here kind of in our home states. Up in the upper Midwest. So we have, like I said, we have 50 communities. We also have, probably 1,000 consulting clients on the other area of our business, which is consulting services. So all 50 states there, we provide consulting for organizations where we don't manage the day-to-day ops, financial, clinical, operational. And that's everything from, senior care providers, health systems, cities, governments, the VA, kind of a wide variety. So we're broad in the sense of we're working in all 50 states. We have a lot of communities, but very narrow. We only do senior care. So we're a healthcare consulting firm, but only seniors.
Well, it's very interesting. And I know there's been a lot of growth, but that growth has come through a lot of strategic thinking and also planning over the years. Yeah. So it's taken a long time to get where the organization is today. And also, too, I know in some of our offline conversations, you've shared just some of the ways that you've thought about maybe kind of pivoting and helping HDG kind of be ready for what the future of senior living looks like. And it seems like you've really opened that up to not just communities, but to everyone through the consulting. So there's so many options there. And I think that just speaks to what we're seeing in general in the senior living industry. So it's a good segue into our next area here, which I want to focus on, which is just covering growth and strategy for HDG. Because like you'd mentioned, getting to 50 communities, that's probably no easy feat, I can imagine. And so now that you've recently hit the 50 community milestone, what does that achievement really mean to you personally and for the company's long-term vision? Because I know it's been a long time coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, thank you. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year, which feels like 1,000 years, and it feels like one day. It just has gone. It feels like we've been doing this for such a long time and all these amazing partners and communities we've had over the year, but time just goes so quickly. Like it's a blink of an eye when it was the year, 2000. So over these years, we've really always stayed laser focused on senior care. We've never gone away from our roots in skilled nursing. We still love skilled nursing. But several years ago, we really started to look at our portfolio and understand as an organization where we needed to be, where consumers needed us to be, where our clients did, and kind of what was the market and consumers telling us, both as a provider of care and as a professional management consulting firm. And we just saw a big push towards senior living for a variety of reasons: lifestyle factors, consumers, different acuity levels across the continuum economic factors, and really made a conscious effort to move more into senior living when we were predominantly skilled in the past. And so that was really planful, because while people like me who grew up in skilled nursing, we are great at managing very lean businesses, high acuity patients, really high regulatory, you know, things that are going to impact all of senior care in some ways, but really are harder on skilled. But there are some things that we needed more of, which is hospitality, culinary, plant operations look different, life enrichment looks different, expanding more into memory care. So what we did is we made sure we had the right team on board. It was a lot of hiring and training and making sure that we had the right team to do a great job in senior living. And we started to make really gradually that portfolio shift. I would say about 9 years ago, we started to move more from being predominantly skilled to really a more broader mix across a more broad mix across the care continuum. We still have 10 skilled nursing communities. Those will always be a part of our portfolio. There's always a need for that, but really have expanded in senior housing. So we were kind of planful in how we grew into the space. And then we've been really, really planful on how we actually grow in size as we look at the portfolio, and making sure that we have regional presence, that we have people in these areas to be in the communities. Absence does not make the heart grow fonder in our profession. You know, we want to be in our communities. We want to know the teams. We want to know the residents. So that's a huge part of it, of being able to run these regional models. Also making sure that the alignment with the owners is what we're looking for. What's the long-term plan for these assets? Who are we working with? What investment is there going to be? So we have kind of a strict list of things that we look through as we start to take on communities. Right. And that's so that we can grow, which is our goal, but not to grow too fast. We all know what happens when people grow too fast in our professions, that we have big growth. We're going to continue to grow, but we do it in a way that we know it's in markets we can do great, with teams we know can do a nice job taking care of our residents and our staff. And so it's been discipline around when new things come, you want to say yes to everything. You want to help all these capital partners. You want to help these clients, and you want to say yes to everything, but you can't. And so we've been pretty disciplined in how we evaluate opportunities. And that's what pushed us over that 50 threshold here in the spring.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. And I know it's been quite a methodical journey over time. So it's awesome to kind of peel back the curtain a little bit. And we appreciate you sharing kind of what that actually takes to get to that number, because we know it's a combination of, like you had mentioned, not just the leadership on your part, but on the team's part to be ready for an expansion like this. And I know when we had spoken for the 25th anniversary story that we had recently put together as like an update, since HDG had just reached that 50 community mark, you had described the growth as being purposeful. And I want to unpack that, because you just mentioned it here in your remarks just now about I want to understand what the criteria might be that you use to decide whether or not to add a community to the portfolio, because as you mentioned, you've really made a lot of shifts in the operating model and what the portfolio looks like. So in terms of when you're thinking about bringing on a new community today, what are some of the things you're looking at, or other things maybe in general that you pay attention to that other operators might also be wondering?
Sure. And I think part of that is I love taking on new communities. I love helping our clients. And so your first response is, yes, we'd love to. But then you really need to take a step back and say, should we? How are we going to do this? What is the right path for that community, for our organization? And so we actually have a documented process that we move through, and we're pretty open about that. So when we get a new opportunity that comes across our desk, whether that's an acquisition or a management opportunity, we like to look at the market. And we, through our consulting practice, have access to just amazing market intelligence and to understand the demographics in that area. What is the demand for this product? What price are we going to go in this? Our consulting team can go on site. We secret shop the market. We really look at what the long-term strength of that market is, especially for the specific product type that we're looking at. And then we also look at the demographics of the workforce in that area, because we do have a lot of markets that have really great demand for seniors housing or even skilled care, but the workforce cannot keep up with it. So we look at those two things kind of right off the bat. making sure that we can be successful. There's a deep dive into financial performance, understanding current projected performance. We're pretty conservative on those things. We look through the scale of the operation, what kind of resources we have in that geography, what kind of resources we would need in that geography, how it would fit into our regions. And we put a pretty close eye on everything. We have a growth leadership team that evaluates this, and then they present it then to our executive team as we make these decisions. And so I think a lot of companies probably approach these in similar ways. I think the one thing that I'm proud of that was a little different is we actually do reference checks on our management clients, and they're around our values, because we really value these partnerships that we have. And we know that when you're managing a community for someone, that relationship is so close. And unless you're aligned on your values and what you're going to do for these residents and these staff, it's a difficult relationship. And so that's a huge thing for us too. And we actually have said no to a few partnerships because we know that the relationship wasn't going to be right. And that's so important for us, for our culture and our values and the way that our team works and wants to be treated. So that's something that's kind of interesting at the last phase of our due diligence is actually a reference check on our clients.
Yeah, that is interesting. I kind of like that. That sense of accountability seems to carry through, maybe through before even an agreement gets signed, that you're really aligned at the table and understanding who you're working with. I think so oftentimes with anytime you're thinking about the growth mindset, everyone can get wrapped up in, like you had said, saying yes to everything.
And, oh, it's exciting. Yeah, right.
It is very easy to get wrapped up into, but you make a good point there. And just after this rapid year of expansion where HDG took on multiple new communities and really started to look at what the portfolio was going to be moving forward, you had mentioned that there was going to be a pause in new acquisitions to really focus on integration. And I want to touch on integration, because I think that's something that we definitely need to focus on. How do you balance the tension between seizing new growth opportunities while just making sure you're protecting the operational quality that HDG has brought to the table for the last 25 years? I know we've talked integration before, but would love to unpack it here.
Sure. Yeah. We're kind of in this pause. We're right now we're rolling into October. We took on our last group of 11 properties in May. We were very, very planful in that there's going to be several months here where we don't take on anything new. We need to make sure that we get our systems and our culture and everything integrated into these new communities. Because then when people come to HDG, and these communities specifically were renamed as Dimensions Living, and they come to a new management company, you know, you have to get there. I always say, like, you have to win their minds and their hearts. We need to make sure that we have our systems and technology and reporting all in the HDG way. But it also takes time to build that trust and that relationship for these on-site teams as a part of HDG. And that takes time. And if you then bring on more communities too quickly, they lose that attention that they need. And so we're still on that pause. I think we'll be bringing some new things on here late fall or early in the new year. But these last few months have been really enjoyable. It's been fun to get to know these new communities, their leaders, their residents. And it's given our teams the opportunity to focus on onboarding in a really, relationship-driven way. It's not transactional, not onto the next thing. We're just really coaching and mentoring and supporting these teams. And the last 15 we brought on were brought on using a new team that we have. So we actually have three operations teams at HDG, and this would be our transition team. This is a team that was developed about a year ago, and this team is just focused on new communities coming into the HDG management portfolio. So we know that bringing on new communities is very different than operating existing communities. So we come in, we're rolling out new brands, new systems, we're doing meet and greets, we're at all three shifts, doing welcome ceremonies, there's swag, there's balloons, it's such a different thing than going into a community, say, where we have our other operations team, which is in our consulting team, that's our turnaround vision. We're going in receiverships, really troubled situations.
Yep.
It's very different. We don't have time to take a breath and say, we're going to have a huge brand party and a rebrand. You know, we're in there to keep the license, keep the lights on, keep the residents safe.
Sure.
These are really different activities. So we have that transition team, ops team. We have our consulting ops team, who really is kind of like that SWAT team. And then we have our stabilized assets ops team. And this is really our core management team. And they are in our communities every single day working on ongoing quality improvement, These are assets that are stable and need to get from 90% occupancy to 95%. They're at 4-star quality and they want to get to 5. You know, it's just these fine tuning, which is different than that initial onboarding. And it's really different than a turnaround. So those three teams all are out working and have different leaders. We're using the same systems and processes, but different leaders, different size portfolios that they're going in with. So that this last group of 15 was the new onboarding team, and it's interdisciplinary. It's operations, it's clinical, it's financial, it's culinary, it's human resources, it's everyone, all hands on deck to onboard these new communities. So it's been fun to watch that team. And as they continue to finalize this, they'll be ready for our next group of assets. And then they hand them over to our perm op team, and they're part of the HDG fam, and we move forward.
Right. Well, that's a great, I think, primer for underscoring some of the things with established relationship partners that HDG has worked with. Mm-hmm. I know we've talked about this in the past as well, but just the benefits of being able to work with large REIT partners, including Ventas, yes, and Abra. I'm sure that opens you up to new opportunities and probably ones where you can fall back on the past relationship of having that back mm-hmm. and forth to really show, hey, mm-hmm. these communities might be good for us, or hey, maybe they mm-hmm. might be better for a different operator. So you probably have a little bit more flexibility because I think that point on relationships is very valid. What makes these partner relationships so successful, and how do you see these partnerships evolving in the next few years? I think we've really seen a push towards more of them in the ways that operators are now institutionalizing their models. But I think it's something HDG has been thinking about for a while. So what's kind of the key to success here? I don't want to give away any of your secrets, but what really makes these larger institutional relationships thrive, and how do you see them evolving?
Yeah, not a secret at all. Just having the right partners. Someone was asking me a couple months ago, like, how do you sleep at night working with REITs? And I was like, well, I sleep just fine. I think you need to work with different partners. They're great. Like, I don't have any... We don't have any problems. We have a lot of, I think we have 16 ownership groups, and two of them are REITs, Sabra and Ventas. They're great relationships. And I think we each bring something unique to the table to make this possible. So we started our relationship with Sabra many years ago in a triple net lease in a community in Texas. And we now have another lease with them in Wisconsin. And then we also manage, 5 communities for them in a RIDEA structure where it's not a triple net lease. We're a third party manager. And it's just been an awesome relationship, you know, specifically with Sabra. They have a lot of technology and pilot programs that they bring us in on. The newest one is robot vacuums. And, they vet these, they invest in our communities. They help us implement these things. So, you know, they bring to the table real estate and capital and technology, and we bring our operating model and our brand and all these different things. So we're better together, and it's really a partnership. So that's really been a long, wonderful relationship with that organization. And then we also started working with Ventas a little over a year ago, and it's also been a great, great relationship. Those are all third-party management of 15 communities in Wisconsin. Also, great organization to work with, and the resources that they bring us. They have insights from across the industry. They have data that they share with us. They have resources that they share with us. So they bring that broad knowledge to the table. We bring market-specific knowledge to the table. So, yeah, those relationships are really important to us, and I see them expanding. And so hopefully we'll see those expand over the next few years. But just on the whole, we have been so fortunate over the years to have, it's like 15 or 16, I have to go count later, Austin, but been so lucky with our ownership groups, and they're so varied. You know, my business partner, Amber, and I own some of our assets. So, you know, we're an ownership group. We also have cities, we have counties, we have the veterans, we have veterans affairs, we have private equity groups, we have not-for-profits, we have a group of sisters, we have religious organizations, you know, hospitals, like just so many different organizations that look to us to run their senior care organizations. And I think when I look at 25 years, those partnerships have been really special between our management clients and our consulting clients, because when it's been 25 years, you know, one of our management agreements is 25 years old. It's just, we've known these people for a really long time, and it's been fun.
And I think it's with some of the new growth that's happened, I want to go back to kind of contextualizing that integration piece, because your comments there on the relationship side, I think really gets to the heart of how you make these things work. And obviously, you know, you outlined the I think kind of like a three-headed dragon approach with the three different operational teams.
Yeah,
that really can work with each other and handle a community at different phases of its life cycle of getting onboarded to HDG. What are some of the biggest operational lessons that you've learned from integrating these new communities? And is there any lessons that have maybe shaped how you view future growth? Because I assume with bringing on these new communities, you've also gained some insight and some perspective about thinking about the future and what that could look like as well.
That's a good question. I think that the learning that resulted in the biggest change is actually the three-headed monster, like you said, right? Like, or dragon. What did you say? Dragon?
Yeah.
Right. That is the result of learnings, right? Like, you go in and bringing a new community into HDG is not the same every time. They're really different. Like, there's one that's going to be with you forever, and it's a name change. There's one that's going to be with you temporarily, maybe during a receivership. There's some to come on to stable or not. It's like, okay, we can't treat them all the same. We have different teams dedicated with different skill sets. That was a huge learning of really understanding that operations isn't operations. It's a little more nuanced. And so I think those teams was a result of those learnings. The other thing is, we cannot underestimate the on-site team's importance to making sure the transition goes well, because the transition is technology, systems, reporting, data. But at the end of the day, it's really making sure that our on-site teams feel that they have everything they need to do a great job. Do they have the staff, marketing resources, care resources? So making sure that we're really, really focusing on those on-site leadership teams has been a big part of it. Being on site, getting to know the markets. Over time, something that we've learned is really the importance of streamlining operations and systems. You can't go in and change everything to the HDG way right away. That's just too overwhelming. But using similar technology partners, I'm using similar KPIs. You know, how do you roll things up in a way that's more streamlined for everyone? So I would say that that's a big learning as well, and just the importance of retention. So we have really high retention, over 90% during our transitions, which is something we monitor really closely, because if those teams start turning over too much, you lose so much progress during it. So we are obsessed with making sure that these teams feel connected to us and the organization, and that relationship's built right away. And it says the first few days.
Right. Yeah. And I think your obsession is well placed, especially because we know that it seems like these staffing challenges have evolved in a way that really are more nuanced. And HDG, as a provider with communities in rural markets, you've really had to, I think, evolve in the ways from a senior living provider's perspective of, one, how you're recruiting new talent, but also, two, how you're thinking about retaining folks. And we had spoken at length on staffing. So I think all your points on integration and being prepared for growth are really underpinned by what you just mentioned here about staffing. So we know it's a challenge across the industry, but what strategies have proven most effective for HDG in recruiting and retaining talent, especially given the context too of being in some rural markets where we know that that's where some of these staffing challenges are still pretty persistent?
They are. And I think while most of our communities are doing really well on staffing, there are still pockets where it is really difficult. You know, it's not great everywhere. We have some markets that bounce back, doing wonderful, but there's some that are hard, and I think especially rural, because there just are not enough people that even if you recruit and retain everyone, there's just not enough out there. I was an ED in a very rural community in Iowa many years ago, and something that we did eight or nine years ago was we started centralizing recruiting. And this was just an awesome change for us. And what it did is we brought our recruiting teams into our Minneapolis central office. We do the posting, the recruiting, the setting up of the interviews, the screening. That is all done by the HDG team. So that means that the on-site team, they're coming in to make final decisions. They're coming in to onboard people. They're coming in to retain people. We want them focused just on hiring and keeping the best staff. We know that you may have 10 people apply, 5 interview, 2 show up for their interview, and 1 stay, right? Like, we want that one who stays and starts to be the focus of the onsite team. Those other 9, we're going to take care of and keep them in our network and make sure that we have, you know, background checks, setting everything up. That is all done centrally. And I think that centralizing our recruiting has been a game changer because it makes sure that the best candidates get quickly to our onsite teams and they can spend their time doing that. Because what I want our onsite teams focused on are things that we cannot do for them at our corporate office, which I imagine is really a support center to these communities. We want our onsite teams focusing on having the right amount of people to take care of occupancy, enough people to take care of them, staff, and doing a great job in providing quality care. If it's outside of those things and there's a way that we can help, we centralize it, whether that's insurance benefits, billing, AP, AR, recruiting, revenue cycle. We even centralize Facebook posts. All our communities need to do is snap a picture of an activity or an event going on for social media. It's sent to our social media team and it's posted. We have the releases for people's images. We do the captions. Like, all we want them to do is focus on being present and enjoying that event. We'll take care of the rest. We'll take care of the posters for it. We'll take care of that. So that's been a huge part. And I think that that helps us retain staff. But I think by taking those things out of the community really helps us focus on retention, because people work in our communities to take care of people and we just allow them to do that. We'll do the admin.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a very concrete example of, I think, because we hear oftentimes about corporate support really being instrumental in helping operations teams do their jobs. But even just having that as a small example seems to have a direct impact in terms of just letting staff spend more time, like you said, with residents. And we know that at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. In terms of too, I know because you, HDG has had a background, I think, and expertise in higher acuity care coming from skilled nursing roots. I know obviously that's not the way the portfolio is shaped now, but still I think it's important because I think it maybe it informs how you view kind of the persistent shortage of licensed care staff that we're seeing because you teams know how to operate high acuity environments.
Yeah.
Communities, because it's been that way for a long time. Are there any creative recruitment or training programs that you're particularly excited about in terms of bringing in new licensed care workers? Because we know that this seems to be one of the areas where it's toughest to hire and to retain.
Yeah, I always say we work in skilled care. You can't scare us. You know, we are used to high acuity. We're used to lower margins, high regulatory environment. But yeah, we still have 10 skilled communities in our portfolio, and some of them are campuses, some of them are standalone. But gosh, you also walk through our senior living communities, and there's a lot of high acuity residents there. And you know, we want that to be the case. We want people to pick a care setting that they like and be able to stay there until the end of life. That really should be our goal. And there's always going to be a space for skilled care. There's always going to be a place for people who need that level of care. But what can we do in our settings as people are living longer, they have more comorbidities, what can we do to keep them there and take great care of them? And that is nursing. That is nurses who have great training and great skills. And I think for some nurses, that challenge is exciting. They get to have the relationships of working in senior care, but also kind of the excitement of some higher acuity. For us, it's training. Making sure we recruit great nurses, give them the training and the support that they need. But yeah, I think the shortage of caregivers in nursing is concerning to everyone. Like everybody, I felt just such great relief about the staffing mandate, especially a while ago about LPNs, because LPNs are the backbone of nursing in skilled care and in senior living in general. You know, they just do such an awesome job, and taking them away from the calculation, I think, was a huge miss. It makes me think of how important they are. So I think as we look at LPNs, we look at RNs, we even look at, you know, having nursing assistants learn new skills and become medication assistants. Like, what are we going to do to continue to educate those caregivers to do tasks that only humans can do? and have them just doubling down on that and replacing tasks that we can have, you know, AI or our robots or these other things do, and kind of rethinking the way that we deliver care and placing our most valued work at the front line, anything else off. Like, the, you know, I think about those folks who are bathing and feeding and caring for our residents. What do we do to make their job easier and give them the training that they need? And anything else we can either outsource, centralize, automate. You know, we can use, like I talked about, the robots for the vacuums. You know, they can do the corridors and the dining rooms, and then our teams can do our resident spaces, and they can do the lobbies where everyone is. And, you know, our nurses can have some things, you know, maybe we do audio documentation that allows them more time to talk to residents and do assessments. And I think it's just, it's never going to be all or nothing, but us just really thinking creatively about how do we address that acute in a way that's efficient? We have enough people. Do we have the technology there? Because as you look at the horizon, there's going to be a lot of people to take care of.
Yeah, most definitely. And
a scary amount of people.
Yeah. And I think that fits into my next question here, which is I want to ask you about technology. I know we're about out of time here for today, but I want to cover your thoughts on the way that you're leveraging data and technology to really improve those care outcomes that you're, and also working towards increasing occupancy and ultimately revenue as well. How do you really view technology integration today for HDG? And it sounds like you've come a long way. 50 communities is no small feat, like we said at the beginning. But how big of a piece has technology been in the evolution of HDG as well?
Yeah, I think it's a big piece, but I also think we're kind of always continuing on that journey. You know, we're working with our AI task force to understand how we'll use that. Some of the robotics things, a huge project we have going on right now is around data integration. As I'm sure all of the operators listening to this know, there's so much data coming at us from every system, financial systems, EMR, EHRs, there's just so much data coming, but it's almost overwhelming of like, how do we pull this data together? How do we make it easy to make decisions? So we're doing a lot of work here on a large ERP project to make sure that we're streamlining our data. We're looking at clinical data and dashboards and making it easy for our frontline teams, trying to reduce the amount of reporting that on-site teams need to roll up to the corporate office, what we can pull automatically, kind of all with the goal of faster decision-making, putting care and time back in front of our residents. So yeah, technology has been a huge part of this, but I also think over the next few years is going to be even a bigger area of opportunity for HDG. Because there's just every day there's something new and amazing. How do you make these selections? It's almost overwhelming, the amount of data and the amount of options. So I think for us, it's timely evaluation of these. How do we do the training for them? Streamlining data and just getting away from data for the sake of data. Like, I just don't want any report that no one's using. Like, what are the key things we want to see? How do we get it quickly? How do we make decisions off of it? And if it's not easy to work with and it doesn't help us make decisions, then we don't need it.
Right. And I think your choosiness is well placed as well, because I think a lot of senior living operators are thinking about this. And earlier this year, I wrote a technology integration piece that really talked about essentially cutting out all the noise of all the different parts that are out there.
Yep.
Because there are so many different options. But I think now we're in a time where senior living operators, they know their chops. I mean, if you're an operator today and you made it through the pandemic, I mean, that was one of, if not the lowest point for the industry in recent history. I think there's a lot of opportunity to fall back on that experience and say what things worked, what things didn't work. And it seems like operators are demanding more consumer grade level technology, you mentioned on that point of needing things that are easy to use and having systems that can dispense information that is digestible to make those insights happen. Aaron, last question here. I want to get your outlook. And just giving the context of HDG celebrating its 25th year anniversary this year. Looking ahead, what do you hope to leave for HDG in the next 25 years? And what excites you most about the future of senior living? I just want to contextualize the anniversary and then get your outlook thoughts here.
Gosh, well, I feel like the last 25 years have been in a blink of an eye, but things have changed so much. Like, when I think of the next 25, I imagine they'll be more growth. I think we'll be faced with like unprecedented demand.
Yep.
I think we're going to have a lot of people to take care of, and it's going to be a responsibility for all of us to do a great job taking care of seniors in a way that's, you know, high quality, lower cost, you know, all the things that we're trying to do here to have a sustainable healthcare system. I think specifically at HDG, it would be growth, consistent focus on quality, you know, expanding our consulting services, you know, going from 50 to who knows how many communities that we'll go to. I think in consulting, we've served, I think, 1,300 organizations. There'll be more of that. So I think it'll be growth. You know, I'm sure there'll be new service lines in the next 25 years. Right, there'll be more technology. You know, we'll go more into home and community-based services. But the thing I don't want to change is our values. We've stuck by those five core values for 25 years. I don't imagine those ever changing. I don't want our culture to change, and we will never go outside of senior care. That's one thing I know won't change. That's where our passion is. And as we grow, it'll always be focused on seniors. But yeah, it'll be fun. You know, a lot of us have been together for almost this whole time, and some of us together 15, 20, 25 years. And it'll be interesting, all of us, what we're up to.
Right.
And looking back and all the adventures that we've been on and what ones are coming. But yeah, I hope it's this. I hope it's a lot of the same things that have happened. Continually growing, adding new team members, taking great care of people, and kind of just charting this path forward that we're on, which is to be a part of this amazing demographics. Like, what a time to be in senior care. We're going to take advantage of it. Like, we're walking into this demographic time with a wonderful company, a great team. We're just going to jump at it.
Yeah, you're definitely spot on with seeing which new service lines will come up. I'm always excited to ask folks kind of where they see things headed, because the industry's already been through so much, and there's already so much change happening this year that we've hadn't even thought about last year, and what we're seeing operators really think about. And I think the level of sophistication we're seeing is exciting for the industry as a whole, as operators really start to really fine tune what they want to do, as given the unprecedented demand, like you had mentioned.
I think it's going to be, staffing is going to continue to be a challenge. You know, gosh, we've had construction and new development challenges, regulatory challenges, consumer preferences, like all these, but it's going to be so much fun to do a great job.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's
all the great operators. We're still going to be standing there in 2050 being like, wow, that was a good run.
Well, Erin, thank you so much for joining us here on Transform.
Thank you. Yeah, I love talking to you. Thank you.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery. One more reminder that if you subscribe to the podcast directly through SoundCloud, a change that we've recently made in our infrastructure could affect your subscription. We apologize for the inconvenience and encourage you to subscribe through a podcast player such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.